Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hi listener, thanks for joining us for episode 29 of the podcast. In today's episode, I'll be catching up with Renaud to continue on with our mini-series on vetting Chinese suppliers. So this is the 10th part and we're going to be discussing the late stage of getting quotations, contracts and negotiations with the supplier. And you might be surprised that there's quite a lot that can be learnt about the supplier, so we're still vetting them at this stage, and this will include their potential capability based on their grasp of what you need, also how to protect your IP when you're going out for different quotations from different potential suppliers, and much, much more. So let's get started. Hi Renaud, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How about you?
Yes, very well, thank you. You fit me in for the recording of today's pod, having gone through a number of the steps that somebody's going to follow when they're vetting new suppliers. And I'm talking about starting with just understanding the problems that could be caused, the initial process of finding what is a bad supplier that you need to be avoiding, evaluating engineering capability, and then all sorts of audits as well, and looking into factory testing facilities. We've gone through an absolute ton of really, really useful information for anybody who's vetting new Chinese suppliers. And as we come to the end of the process, today we're looking at pricing, negotiation, and contracts. So we've already done a lot of due diligence, but getting pricing, for example, is also an important part of due diligence. Can you explain how this is a helpful part of the vetting process?
Yes, if we did not mention, let's say, business topics, business issues at all, we would be missing something. Because, hey, people send a lot of signals in the way they conduct their negotiations, you know, how strict they are, how flexible they are, and so on. So it's full of information.
Okay, so where's a good starting point, Renaud?
Well, maybe the first thing we should mention is when to talk about pricing. So if you go into China, you want to buy office chairs, let's say, and you don't want to design your own chair. You just want to look at a lot of chairs and then say, hey, I want this one, right? So yes, then you can look at the price tag right away. Because then you can immediately sort of calculate in your mind, okay, you know, can I make money while selling this chair at a price that is acceptable in my market? You know, is this supplier for the same kind of chair, same materials, blah, 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 more expensive or cheaper than this other supplier? This gives you a lot of good information. So supplier is way too expensive. You're just not going to waste time there. If supplier is really cheap, you start to wonder, hey, why are they so cheap? It's something I don't get. You know, are they going to raise the price on me at the last moment? Are they going to subcontract this to like a really crappy workshop? Are they going to substitute some of the materials? I mean, this calls for a lot of questions, right? But this is an example of off-the-shelf product, right? You go there and then you say, okay, show me what you have, what's the price? It's not that different from going to a Costco or a Carrefour or something and then looking at different prices and buying your chair there. It's just, you know, quantity is not the same, and maybe you don't buy stock, they have to make to order. But the approach is a little bit similar. Now, let's say you want to design a new kind of office chair, let's say, but with a new kind of mechanism that, I don't know, you know, makes it hang out very nicely and makes it very comfortable, and you're the first one to invent that, right? So in that case, are you going to work with the designer, you know, have some renderings, and then go around a number of different suppliers and show it to them and say, hey, can you make that? What's the price? Well, what you're going to do is give them a lot of inspiration. Maybe they really like this idea. Maybe they talk about it to their own customers and say, oh, yeah, yeah, try to show us a prototype, then we'll buy it, you know, and then they will make it behind your back. And you will see the same kind of idea pop up in the marketplace the following year, or maybe even faster, right? So when to talk about pricing really depends. If you have confidential IP rights, you don't want to spread out everywhere, because even if you have suppliers sign non-disclosure agreement, non-use, non-store convention, non-whatever you want, there's going to be a lot of leakage. Actually, Steve Dickinson on the China Law Blog had a good post about leakage of IP rights. It is a very serious concern, and there's actually not that much you can do to prevent it. I mean, the best is to limit the number of suppliers you talk to, and to make sure that you only disclose this information to, you know, properly vetted potential suppliers, right? So that means you talk about pricing later. Now, what you could do is that very special mechanism, you, in your design, you don't mention that, and you show a classic mechanism, and you do your wool design based on that. Then you can go around and show it to them, and they're going to be like, oh, yeah, whatever. It's just another office chair, you know, nothing really special. Looks a bit weird, maybe, whatever. But okay, here's the materials I want. Here's this, here's that. What's the price? Then you can start to see who, you know, if you ask 10 potential suppliers, maybe 5 of them are going to be roughly, you know, within 10%, pretty close. And then there's going to be maybe a couple of them really cheap, a couple of them very expensive. Okay, it might be all over the place, but it gives you an idea of, well, this is roughly what, you know, average suppliers would charge, and this is the high end, this is the low end. So this really helps you understand, you know, set your expectations. So if you want to have it made in a really professional manufacturing plant where they have, you know, they can take care of the engineering to make your new product. They can take care of the quality, build quality in, and then really have a good quality system when making it. And, you know, good manufacturing processes and everything. Well, you might be ready to pay more for that. After all, it's an innovation, it's a new product. You're going to make more margin anyway. You're going to set it at a higher price. If that's your business approach, then you might be happy to pay 20% more than quote unquote the average price, because you don't want average Chinese quality, right? I mean, if that's your strategy, that's fine. And you can use the quotations from the cheaper ones to show your number one choice. Hey, you know, yeah, I can live with a premium on your price, but you can charge me double what the others would charge, right? Look at kind of pricing I got from the others, right? So you can use it to show them that you've done your homework, you have an idea, and they know that if they're too expensive, they might lose you, right? Just to keep them sort of in check. A lot of importers either hide something, as I mentioned, or if it's just looking for parts instead of a full product, they might design it a bit differently. However, it's the same material and it comes out of the same fabrication process, right? So it could be extruded PVC, it could be die-cast zinc, it could be whatever, right? If you're just looking for a part and you say, hey, here's a part, can you make it? So, and you know that if they can make this part that you designed for them, they can make that other part that you designed but are not showing to them, right? And if it's roughly the same consumption of material, the mold is not going to be more complicated, and the process is not going to be more special, immature, then you can count on actually, you know, you can take their price and say, okay, this is probably what I'm going to have to pay for the real part that I don't want to show them right now, right? So we've helped some customers do these kind of things when really it's, you know, the design is sensitive, and it's not. I mean, it's not a bad approach. So yeah, the number one question is when you talk about pricing. Now, this is not specifically about pricing. This is about pricing and business terms, right? Because it always goes together. So from the beginning, you can talk about payment terms. You can talk about the Incoterm and, you know, how to ship and where and so on. You can talk about, you can talk about the packaging. You can talk about them keeping something in their warehouse and shipping in, you know, to three different countries in three different batches. You can talk about a lot of things, right? But for pricing, you need to really exchange some technical information. So it might not come right away at the beginning. That's my point here.
You do make a good point, because I think that there's probably been many manufacturers who have found suppliers who they think are suitable, and perhaps they've gone in with too much IP in the past, and they've been burnt because that IP is going to make its way around, and then their unique ideas are going to end up on the market before maybe their product does. So yeah, that is a very important point.
Yes, and especially if you start to work with the wrong kind of manufacturer on prototyping. You know, they say, okay, let us make some samples. That's great. We love your product. Yeah, we're very motivated. Look how motivated we are. And, the price, and, you want a little bit cheaper. Okay, it's fine. You know, let us make the prototype. And second prototype. And you train them. You train them to make the right prototype. And then their prototype is going to go into their showroom. It's going to go, you know, to their number one, number two, number three customers. Hey, look at this new product we have. It's great. So the customer is not going to ask, you know, is it really your product, your inspiration? You know, you hired some designers to get that. Wow, that's great. You know, great job. Because, okay, it's your product, right? So I can buy it. I can buy it from you. Yeah. Great. You know, and that's how you have very fast competition, right? Now, they might not make it in their own factory. They might make it in their cousin's factory, right? Most Chinese suppliers are smart. They know that if you have, they have production for you and at the same time production for your competitor of your product, and you come during production, you're not going to be very happy if you see it. It's not so easy to hide if it's on the production line, right? So, and you might have some tough contracts, and you might be able to sue them and everything. No, they cooperate with other factories that are going to take care of it, right? So, or they might subcontract your orders, even worse.
We've spoken about protecting IP and putting in, you know, relevant contractual protection with suppliers before, and I'll link back to that, of course, in the show notes. But just to quickly reiterate on that, then, so what would you suggest in order to avoid this from happening?
Well, first, you know, think of what kind of manufacturer you want to deal with. What is their sort of profile, you know, size? Do they have a lot of processes in-house or not? What is their experience in terms of products instead of in terms of export markets and so on? What kind of technologies are they used to and so on if it's your new product? You know, screen them out. Do your search. Identify some candidates and screen them out. And you might, now, if it's a very advanced product that took a lot of R&D on your side and you really want a very good partner in that and you're going to place million-dollar orders, it's going to go deeper. You know, that's where you really need to listen to the full series of our 10 podcasts about
right.
Player vetting. Now, on the other hand, if it's a relatively simple product, you know, and you think you can still switch to another supplier, if this one doesn't really fare well, well, you know, it's going to be much more straightforward. But you need to do some screening, some qualification, right? So, and then once you have one, maybe two suppliers that you think, hey, yeah, these guys are good candidates, maybe one will make it and the other one will be as a backup and maybe make a little bit of the quantity just to keep them interested, right? So when you get to that point, have them signed non-disclosure, non-use, non-circumvention agreements that are enforceable in their country, in the country where they have assets. Have them sign it with a company that has assets so that if things go wrong, they know that you can sue them and you can actually really hurt them. Make it very, very clear that it's confidential. I mean, write on it everywhere, you know, confidential, confidential. Make sure they understand they're not going to just put it on a shared folder for everybody in the company to have access to it. You ask, okay, who's going to work on this? This guy, this lady, okay. Make sure that they don't send anything confidential to their own suppliers, or the suppliers will have to sign, you know, an non-disclosure agreement also, and so on and so forth. I mean, and then you can go deeper and deeper and deeper into that, right? But it's a lot about awareness and just avoiding some of these really stupid things like, oh yeah, the salesperson was using her email address. That's personal. Oh, I didn't even pay attention to that. Sorry. You know, I mean, come on. If you work with Chinese suppliers that are so amateur, so amateurish that that's what their salespeople feel entitled to do, just don't work with them. I mean, this is very easy screening, right? If they have no sense about confidentiality, about information security, that they let their staff write to you with at 163 or one of at qq.com kind of email addresses, then okay, it's an easy signal. Just weed them out. Forget about them. Forget about them because they probably have no system in place to safeguard your information anyway.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. And you're just not going to know until you've done that due diligence, which is why this is why we're doing these podcast episodes in the first place. So, yeah, very, very good point there. If we come back to pricing, negotiation, now that we've worked out roughly what the market rate is from the suppliers that we're looking at, now that we have also worked out how to get quotations without giving away too much IP at an early stage, certainly useful with more unique products, what then can we expect in a quotation from a supplier in order for us to actually use that quotation as a gauge of whether they're really capable?
Well, first, a good supplier will ask questions. You can't just, I mean, again, if it's a very simple product, if it's Christmas balls, and you're on the Canton Fair, let's say the pandemic has receded and you can still, you can fly again to Guangzhou, let's say. And sure. You see Christmas balls and you say, well, okay, this is good. What's the price for that? They might just say, you know, okay, well, that's, you know, it's X cents per piece if you buy at least a 20-foot container. And okay, and that's FOB. Okay. You know, I mean, this is a very, very simple kind of quotation that you can give you on the fly. And they can also, you know, the payment terms in that case would by default be 30% advance payment before they start to do any purchasing or production, and 70% if you don't negotiate anything before shipment. So that's a very, very simple kind of approach. Now, if it's a more complicated product, or you make it clear that you have, you know, standards, quality standards, then they should make sure to understand that fully before they give you any quotation. Or they might say, okay, well, preliminary quotation would be that, but we still need information on this, 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 and this, right? Now, that's a professional supplier, right? So it's not that much about what information you would have in a quotation. It's about making sure that they get the information out of you in a way that makes the quotation grounded in very firm ground. So, otherwise, they will come back to you later and say, well, yeah, actually, you didn't tell us about that, but your packaging is pretty special. So it adds 5 cents per piece or 20 cents per piece. Or, and then also, we didn't know about this very strict quality standard, but it implies a lot of rejects in production, blah, 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 yada, yada, right? And the supplier we wanted to use for that component actually doesn't want to do it because you have such strict standards, da, 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 da. So you need to be really, really clear about that. There's some, and we've had customers like that. I mean, they want the product to be basically perfect. So now we always ask, you know, what kind of finishing do you want on anything mechanical, any piece, you know, like for the enclosure, for the buttons, for all these things, what level of finishing do you need? Because if it's the finishing of, I don't know, a cheap Amazon Kindle, actually the finishing is not bad at all, but you can see that it's a company that tries to make a decent device at with very tight costing, and finishing is nice, right? It's already a relatively nice finishing. Versus if they say, well, I want the iPhone. Well, if they say I want the iPhone, that means they will want more and more and more prototypes until they have a prototype that's really, really, really nice. So that means the development time might be, 8 months instead of 4 or 5 months. It means different component suppliers have to be selected. It means a lot of things, okay? And this should be clarified from the very beginning. So otherwise, it drives the suppliers nuts. It drives them nuts because they say, well, I think it's pretty good. And then the customer says, no, I really want a very good finishing. This is not good for the kind of customers I want to sell to. And they think it's just a matter of putting pressure on the poor suppliers and saying, no, you're not doing good enough. Just try harder, right? But it often means switching to different component suppliers. And if you buy quantities like Apple, you know, it's a matter of time and efforts until you get all of this right. Smart efforts, right? But still, you're going to get there. But if you if you're going to buy 2,000 pieces of your widget, well, the good tier one suppliers are not going to be interested. They're not even going to look at your inquiry or your supplier's inquiry for the components. So you need to be very realistic here. So all of this to say, it's not that much about the information that's inside the quotation, because obviously in a quotation, you get the price, you get payment terms and an Incoterm and maybe, you know, the lead time for production and these kind of things. But the most important is what is based on, you know, has the quality standard been defined, or at least is there a good indication of what it's going to be? And what exactly is the product, including the packaging, including everything, right? Well, including the warranty you want to offer your customers. I mean, if you want to offer a warranty of 5 years, but supplier usually sells to companies that only offer a warranty of 1 year, somebody's going to have to do something differently, right? So does the supplier know about that? And what I see very often is that buyers just go around and say, hey, here's the product I want to buy, what's the quotation? And then Chinese suppliers, that they know it's part of the sales process. So they don't resist, they kind of go along, okay, yeah, well, that's gonna be 7.25 USD per piece, da 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 da. Oh, well, my target price is 6.5. Do you think you can make it? And then we discussed again with the guys that are maybe 6.75. We think we can make it, you know. I mean, at this early stage, this is ridiculous because the buyer thinks it's locking something, but it's locking nothing at all. Because the supplier, you know, Chinese suppliers, I mean, and actually Chinese business people in general, they sort of live in the day. They don't really think 1 week out, you know, 2 months out and so on. Not really in business anyway. So it's like, today, if I give this price concession, I can keep this customer in the sales funnel and they might become a good customer later. Now, we might have to raise the price later. We'll see. You know, we haven't done the sourcing work on the components yet. We don't really know exactly how long it's going to take in production. We don't know a lot of stuff. So anyway, they want a price concession. We'll give it to them. I mean, we have all the excuses in the world to get the price up again soon. So that's sort of the little game that people fall prey to. And it's just way too early to try to lock the price if the supplier doesn't have all the information they need. So it's kind of ridiculous. And it's simply the sign of an immature project. So, I mean, to get back to your earlier question about how they can safeguard their intellectual property. Well, let me tell you, an easy one is to work with a design firm, maybe in their country or, you know, out of China, and, you know, get the design files and get the prototypes made there and get the tests made on the prototypes there and so on and so forth, and keep all that out of China as long as possible. Then when they say, okay, ready for China or for Vietnam, let's look for a manufacturer there, then they have a very mature set of technical information, and they can do some, they know what kind of processes the manufacturer must have in place. They know a lot of things. This is going to help them in the vetting process of the manufacturer. And then once they have gone through the vetting process of the manufacturer, which usually, you know, takes care in parallel with their prototyping efforts, but they don't need to divulge, you know, what exactly is the product at that stage. It's just talking in very broad terms. Yeah, we're going to do this. So we're planning to make 20,000 pieces and da 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 da. This is roughly the kind of product, but I cannot share the design with you yet. And then as they make progress in the supplier qualification process, they can share more and more, to the point where, you know, the number one candidate, once they feel comfortable with them, can see the whole thing and can give pricing on it, right? That in these cases, that's the way it works usually. And companies that have been through this game a few times, they often try to do that. They try to have their product design as mature as possible, you know, confirmed through prototypes that have been tested and refined and iterated and so on. And then they go to serious manufacturers and they show they're serious. Yeah, you're not going to have a ton of development work to do because look, we already have a final prototype. We have all the design files. There's been some tests. There's a testing plan. There's a quality standard that's been documented. Da, da, da. And we're going to review everything with you. We're going to make sure you understand. You can ask all the questions you want, but you can already, you know, work on pricing based on all this information, right? And what do you think? Give us your feedback, right? So they show they're pretty serious. And yeah, it does come with higher cost because they have to finance all that themselves rather than have a typical OEM manufacturer do this and make a lot of it for free. But as we discussed before, this is more of the approach for contract manufacturers. And then when they work with the contract manufacturer, they keep all the power in their hands, basically. It's still pretty easy for them to switch to another one because they have all the design files. Hopefully they also have the bill of material with all the suppliers of the components and the pricing and everything. So they can go to another one if the contract manufacturer they selected is not doing a very good job. But you know, in the long term, in many cases, that's much cheaper.
Yeah. Is it actually worth the extra costs that, like you've spoken about, in comparison to working with a Chinese factory or developer and perhaps having a lot of back and forth with them and even having delays to the project, which would be avoided if you took care of it? Otherwise, I mean, what's the cost of that? So, yeah, you make a very good point with that.
Yeah, it depends on the expected volume, you know. Depends on the expected volume. It also depends on how much capital you can burn at this stage. I mean, most investors in hardware startups, if you're a startup, want to see a prototype. They don't want to just see a back of the napkin kind of sketch and, you know, a lot of nice projections. No, they want to see prototypes. So to get to that point, you have to put in some cash, right? If you don't have that, then you have to work with an OEM manufacturer. However, if the investors don't see that the OEM manufacturer signed an agreement about you owning all the intellectual property rights, if they see that the OEM manufacturer is keeping some of the files and they want to share with you, and so will they invest? No, because it means you're not really in control of anything. So it's an unfortunate situation. In these cases, you need to have some cash, hopefully of your own or friends and family, let's say, to put in just to get over that hump, right? That's the situation. But if you want to avoid going for investors, if you're not sure the volume is going to be there, is going to be high, well, then you try to sell your project to an OEM manufacturer. And yeah, you guys are going to be partners. You're not going to have all the information that you would like to have. You will rely on them maybe more than you would like to. But in some cases, it has worked well, you know, for some people. So I cannot discard it.
You were talking about prototyping just then, and I do recall you wrote quite a long guide to, I think it includes about nearly 30 prototyping firms in China that for all types of different prototypes. And I think this is potentially a useful resource at this point. So I will definitely add that in the show notes for this particular podcast. So by doing this, you're keeping a lot more black and white. I get that. And it seems to me that once you're getting a quotation back from a potential supplier, you're going to be able to assess them on how well they understand your requirements. And I suppose that works both ways, because are they asking you to find out your requirements and your needs? If they are, that's obviously a very good sign, yeah? But also, you, perhaps as the company who wants something made, you need to modify your behavior as well to make sure that things are very, very clear to the suppliers to avoid problems down the line.
Oh, definitely, yes. I see a lot of buyers coming in and being very messy, you know, communicating requirements when asked, not before, sometimes in an email, sometimes in WeChat or whatever, not consolidating it, not trying to do a master document. No, you know, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, most Chinese suppliers are not very well organized to keep all this information. So if you, the buyer, don't make that effort, the whole process is going to be chaotic. Then you're going to have to repeat 5 times the same thing. In the end, it's going to be much longer for you. Yeah, that's common frustration.
Well, and this brings me on to perhaps my closing question. Are there any tips that you can provide including that last one that you just went through, for, you know, entrepreneurs or inventors who are perhaps more new to sourcing from China, to help them to be more successful when they're actually negotiating pricing and all the rest of it with Chinese suppliers?
Well, I understand your situation. As I said before, you might not want to speak about pricing right away. Don't, you know, definitely if it's the first time you buy from China or Vietnam or some other East Asian countries, don't try to get the price as low as possible. I see some people, you know, they contact 50 different potential suppliers and let's say on Alibaba. And then they say, no, I need, you know, my target price is 1.5. And then they're like, but no, this is 2.3 or 2.5, but this is way too high. But, you know, if they contact 50 different people, one of them is going to say, okay. And they're going to say, wow, you know, I'm such a good buyer. I mean, here's a professional, you know, I did my homework. I really did a good job. I found a cheap one. All the other ones are probably trading companies just marking up. I found the one that's really the manufacturer. You know, people tell themselves all kinds of stories without going on site, without trying to understand the ins and outs. They tell them some stories. And then what's going to happen with this guy who who gave a crazy quote out of the blue to stay in the sales process? Well, you know, at some point, they're going to have to revise the price up, or they're going to make crap with cheaper materials, with, you know, totally botched workmanship. I mean, this is for inexperienced first-time buyers of off-the-shelf products. Yeah, that's the number one killer, I would say. Yes. You know, sometimes they don't even understand why that happened to them. It's kind of sad. They don't realize it's their own behavior that put them in the corner. But yeah, it can be relatively easy, you know, to say, hey, I'm the buyer, I have my feet on the table, you know, you're just, you know, a bunch of Chinese suppliers, I'm gonna tell you what I want. And you know, when you're selling, all these salespeople from the other side of the world, they're gonna be like, they're going to try to please you because they want to keep you in their sales funnel again. And they're not going to say no. They're going to say, yeah, maybe we can do something with that, you know, just to tell their boss, hey, look, I have one more fish, you know, on one of my lines. Let's see where it goes, right? So, yes, this might be the number one killer for new companies. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that this is really, really an interesting part of the vetting process, perhaps more important than one might immediately think, that you can actually learn a lot from just getting quotations and discussing pricing and requirements with the potential suppliers who you've been vetting. So yeah, very, very good advice for the listeners there. And with that, I think we'll wrap up today, Renaud. So thanks for joining me. I will speak to you next week.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.